Is we should read out some articles, and also I was thinking if my mate Will Ryan isn't too busy, he might also pop in for a bit as well. But starting off today, I'd like to thank all the listeners who've been donating and subscribing and whatnot to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. You are helping to keep the wheels greased here. It's a balancing act trying to survive and work for the people rather than the man. So, of course, any support is well appreciated. And anybody who has a spare few bucks, I don't know, and careful you got $2 or $100, you know, please, we need your support more than ever to expand the show and to do other things, get more equipment, that sort of stuff, so. I'm going to get some lighting and a green screen and a few other things. They're not actually that expensive. I was thinking of launching a little thingamajigger on the website, you know, one of those things that you've got a set goal of cash that you need to get together to get some things to do, you know, that sort of thing, eh? I reckon that'd be an idea. Be able to improve the show somewhat, turn it more into a television extravaganza. / radio. It'll be fun, you know, bring people on. And also, incidentally, it'd be capable of turning the office that we've got here also into a studio, get an extra microphone so we can have people in the studio live, sitting on the couch there and via webcam. We'll have the computer working and giving people a shout out in person. So I think there's a lot of room for expansion, and we can make it a lot more fun, a lot more interesting. And, of course, anybody who's interested in seeing that, power's in your hands, basically. I can only put the work in, but people bring either three things to a deal: talent, resources, or capital. We've got plenty of talent, plenty of resources, but no capital. Now, news today, and, of course, I think one of the worst things about mainstream media is that they have lots of articles, most of which are completely irrelevant and simply don't matter. You know, sport, for example, sport is such a huge part of New Zealand news. It really is. It's massive. Half the news hour is sport in New Zealand. I'm not sure how it is in the rest of the world, but that's what it's like here. Well, half an hour, and within that half an hour, we've got to split up what's happened in this country and what's happened all over the world today. and then we do sport. It's incredible. How can you give that much coverage to sport? I don't know. What does it matter? Essentially. For instance, Rugby Almanac, an institution. The hell is Almanac? Why is it an institution? Maybe people who are that far into rugby should be institutionalized. Maybe that's what they're trying to say. Oh my goodness. It's a terrible, terrible country at the best of times. However, good news is, no road deaths over Easter. Here's an article here. And I got an explanation for that. You know how many people went away this Easter? Stuff all. You know why? Because the gas was too flaming expensive. Everybody's stuck where they are. How many people listen to the show right now went away for Easter? I didn't. Couldn't afford to. My sister, who could afford to, didn't go because the news said the weather was going to be bad. And it was the most beautiful, sun-baked weekend I have seen. It was even better than summer. Even better than summer. And the news said it was going to be bucketing down the whole weekend. You know, perhaps that's part of what people should be expecting, because that's what I expected. I expected the media to report it wrong. But anyway, the Easter road toll period is officially over and not a single person has died. The lowest record since 1956. Police believe the fatality-free weekend is because of good weather conditions across the country and the decision to change the speeding threshold from 10 to 4 kilometres, which means they can ticket you if you're going 4 kilometres over the speed limit, as opposed to about 10, which is what everybody in Auckland travels like. Seriously, you drive along any main road, it's a 50-kilometre zone, everybody is travelling at least 60. Okay? Nobody obeys this. And it seems like and I'll be rolling past cops traveling 60 with many other people doing the exact same thing. And they don't pull over anybody. Maybe they're just doing selective enforcement so those who have actually got enough money to go holiday making this Easter weekend or whatever get some extra taxation while they're at it, you know? Yo, you're 4 kilometres over the speed limit. That's a $400 fine. Oh, no, it's probably more like $100 or something like that. But still, you know what really sucks after you save up heaps of money to go away on the weekend? Getting a speeding ticket for going 4 kilometres over it. Oh, it saves some lives, though, doesn't it? You know, doesn't really matter about freedom. The next lowest toll road tolls on record are three deaths for the years 2003, 2002, and 1998, and the weekend has seen a drop in non-fatal crashes too. Now, of course, the police put that all down to, oh, we're being more strict, ergo, everybody's surviving more. It'd be interesting to actually try and quantify that, because that's the spin they put over here. There's my spin. People just can't afford to go on. There was bugger all people on the roads this Easter. This is probably the worst fuel prices I've ever seen in my lifetime. It's come on. We've got more than enough oil in this country. We've got more than enough free energy devices being invented by people in sheds in this country every other day. You know, there's no shortage of energy. And not to mention the fact that we're still using old crap. Look, we have cars that have the ability to have radar on them to be automatically piloted as well. Okay, that's what we've got right now. And imagine if we started using all that technology. Imagine if there were no longer any crashes because any time you were going near a crash, your radar would automatically slow you down, brake, and prevent the fracking thing from happening. Okay? These are the things. Laws don't solve problems. Technology solves problems. Every time. But of course, there's sometimes unforeseen circumstances can change. You know, so a lot of things, they go really awry because of noble intentions, you know. Speaking of which, sexualized children blamed on TV and computer games. How many times have I talked about how at 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon, they have basically music videos with strippers and all this kind of stuff, and saying that it's absolutely disgusting and that stuff shouldn't be on air when children are watching it? And here it comes. A growing number of highly sexualized Taranaki children are being referred to counselors after displaying inappropriate sexual behaviors, like stripping on their desk during class. Computer games and TV are being blamed for the problem. The Taranaki Safer Family Center, that sounds really ominous, doesn't it, in Orwellian, seen 58 cases of sexualized behavior in children aged 5 to 11 years old this year, manager Tina Gulliver said. It is an escalating and it is a community problem, she said. The centre provides social work services, including counselling and education for victims of sexual abuse or assault, as well as behaviour management for children and teenagers around Taranaki. And I'd probably remark that these kind of facilities who deal with the vulnerable, sexually exploited and such like that children, are often sexual exploiters themselves in a lot of cases, and I wouldn't be surprised to find that one out. But I don't have any evidence to suggest it in this particular case. Gulliver said early to exposure to sexual content through the media and entertainment industries was contributing to the problem. Now, what studies has he come through here? I guess we'll find out. Our children are seeing things they shouldn't and then acting them out. There's a lot of it on PlayStation games and TV that parents don't realise is there. And that's part of it, she said. And that's what kids do. Monkey see, monkey do. That's what it is we're like with kids. You know, you hear about something, and then you go and you try it. It happens all the time. That's how children learn how to do things, because they'll see you walking. They'll see you acting like an honourable person. They'll see you being helpful and cleaning up after other people, etc., etc., and they'll start to mimic those behaviours. On the other hand, you put different sets of behaviours in front of them for them to mimic, you might have some different results, won't you? Normal sexual behaviour in children could become abnormal, and it was important to educate children and families about what is appropriate, Gulliver said. Now, don't you think that a predatory kind of pedophile elite structure, you know, that's that sort of thing, as I believe there is operating in this country, would benefit quite greatly from a largely overly sexualized group of young children starting to spring up everywhere all over the country through the sexualization of TV and video games? You know, again, one of those allegedly unintended consequences. Now, it's when they keep doing it, or are doing it at the wrong age, that it becomes a problem. We need to do the work now so these children don't become a bigger problem later, she said. Gulliver said some teenagers were receiving treatment for sexually harmful behaviour, and well, with 24% of their clients aged between 12 and 24. Last week, police crime statistics revealed a nationwide increase in rape and other sexual offences in 2011. But the numbers for New Plymouth showed a downward trend, with 43 sexual assaults and related offences recorded last year, compared with 48 in 2010, and rural Taranaki recording 33 in both years. Gulliver said those statistics did not stack up with what was coming through their doors. Now, when it comes to sexual assault, a lot of stuff is not reported. And I watched a film last night called The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And it's quite horrific, really. You know, this is a girl, she's under the ward of the state, who claim that she's insane. So she has to basically go to this guy every time she wants money for even so much as food or a new computer or something like that so she can do her work. And he rapes her. You know, ties her up and rapes her. And it's that kind of power play situation that many people who are researching into the family courts and child, youth and family services, CPS, even child protective services equivalents, in the Netherlands and England and Ireland and all over the world, and the exact same thing's being reported, that there are basically child-hungry, corrupt, pedophile scum working at these organizations who are basically abusing kids without reprimand. And you have a look at what the media just reports on, you know, a few numbers here or there, and they give these agencies undue credit as being somewhat authoritative on the facts of the cases and all of this sort of thing. It's all kind of PR. It's come down to the point where sexual abuse among children is becoming an epidemic, and a lot of children are going missing. And it's much more than people would realize, far freakier than you could ever conceive. Now, the link here, I'm not sure, can really be blamed just on the children and the video games and the TV, because there's a lot more to it, and I don't really have too much time to get into it on this broadcast. But coming up after the break, I'm going to try and get my mate Will Ryan up with us on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Please join us there in the chat room. We'll be right back taking your calls. 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. Back in a few minutes. Jamming a finger in the face of scumbags and pointing out their scumbaggery. That's what we do right here on the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Will's not able to turn up. He's got to duck out for a bit, though. But what we're going to be doing with him, another guy, Shane Malvia, who's a commentator for the left in this country, we're going to bring them on and have a wee bit of a debate about the merits of it, because I find that you don't have terribly many, you know, two-sided proper debates between the left and the right. It's always kind of like name-calling and rhetoric sort of thing, and it's, you're not being called out, you're not being challenged on a lot of things in the public forum, and I think this would be a good idea because, quite frankly, when you start to understand the real paradigms behind them, it changes how you think when politicians speak to you or say certain things, because you notice they're kind of reading from a wee bit of a script sometimes. Now, speaking of reading from a script, the media have been all over this serious situation like the bubonic plague, honestly. I love the buzzwords I keep using, regime, regime, regime. Okay, just remember, every time it's a bad government that we don't like, it's called a regime. Every time it's a good government that we do like, it's the administration, okay? The Obama administration, the Saddam Hussein regime, you get the idea. So rebels have killed six near the Turkey border. Six members of Syrian security forces and customs officials were in fierce clashes close to the northern border with Turkey. The opposition, Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, said. Now, it's all these human rights commentators, and what I find interesting about human rights is that there's no such thing, because they could just be taken at the barrel of a gun, and they frequently do. Now, it is said that the fighting took place in the village of Salama, who are famous for their salami, close to a border crossing between the Syrian town of Azaz and Turkish town of Kilis. Eight rebel gunmen were wounded in the clash, the British-based observatory said. Now, of course, the British don't have any interest in Syria at all, do they? You know, apart from, you know, strategic control of the region and what have you. Around 15 kilometres to the south, government forces bombarded the town of Tol Rifat, the observatory said. See, now, this is coming from one source, and is it corroborated? I don't know. Adding that there were reports that dozens of people had been killed or wounded, but it had no immediate details. Mm-hmm. Bias is a bad thing in some cases. President Bashar al-Assad has been trying to crush an uprising against his rule, which erupted over a year ago. The United Nations says his forces have killed 9,000 people, while Syrian authorities, who blame foreign-backed militants for the violence, say 2,500 soldiers and police have been killed. And that has been admitted in many mainstream media sources that foreign troops are in there, they are funding the rebels, they are training them, they are attacking Assad, taking out strategic targets and setting them up and ambushing them and what have you. You know, it's a big mess over there. I'd really love to have Webster Griffin Tarpley on to explain the situation. He's actually been there while they're being shelled and stuff like that, so it'd be important to get his perspective on this on the ground. And just like in Libya's case, Syrian people didn't really have to pay electricity bills. It was really cheap housing, cheap gas, and all that kind of stuff. Highly educated population. Women were traditionally more likely to get a higher education in a tertiary institution than the men were. That kind of thing, which the media just doesn't talk about. All they say is the word regime and killing, and people just suddenly go, oh my God, we've got to kill this regime. The Syrian government said on Sunday that it wanted written guarantees that insurgents would stop fighting before it pulls back its troops under the terms of a UN peace plan, which has called all sides in Tyria. It's like a land of tyranny. Syria to cease fire by Thursday. Now, UN, I think, is pretty hypocritical about all of this, considering they've been caught numbers of times. There's this footage of them, UN armored vehicle, turning up outside a shanty town in Haiti and just firing randomly into people's homes. Just randomly. And in, what's it called, Rwanda and Burundi, when people were getting hacked to death with machetes and things like that. UN troops prevented people from escaping the slaughter and just watched and practically facilitated the cut-up of, 100,000 people, 150? Over a number of days. It was brutal. And they just sat there and watched. And that's what they do. In the Congo, there was a right-wing sort of libertarian type guy who was running a segment of the Congo nation down south. In the north, being a whole bunch of bloodthirsty communists and everything said like that, well, these guys are starting to enjoy freedom and what have you, can't have that, let's invade them. And of course, the UN helped them, blew up the radio stations and roads and government buildings, assassinating, God, goodness knows, all this other stuff. And these are just a few examples that have been happening all over the world many, many, many times. So when you think about the UN coming into Syria and trying to stop violence, they're full of crap. It's just that simple. Okay? Now, speaking of the Middle East, Egypt gas pipeline subject to more explosive attacks. The resources that we're all living off, forcibly, most of them, oil especially, are under attack, right? And they're trying to force this bottleneck, New World Order of types and what have you, to try and ensure that people's rising costs of living stops. And they start to become more frugal, start to travel less, start to do less. And they're willing to pay and finance and arm terrorist groups in order to do it, in order to stop you from, you know, having a relatively cheap and nice lifestyle. Because it's bad for business, basically, business of tyranny. If you have people who are independent, have a bit of spare cash, they tend to be not quite so stressed, not quite so distracted, and seem to be capable of paying attention and fighting back when they're getting screwed over. Not a good thing. An explosion hit the Egyptian pipeline carrying gas to Israel and Jordan today, the 14th time since the uprising against President Hosni Mubarak began last year, security forces said. The blast took place in the northern Sinai at the entrance of the Mediterranean coastal town of Al-Arish, Residents in the city told Reuters they had heard the sound of the explosion. No group has claimed responsibility for the attacks on the installation that crosses the increasingly volatile Sinai Peninsula. Probably, you know, some kind of CIA-funded Al-Qaeda scumbaggery. Security in Sinai was relaxed after the fall of Mubarak in 2011 as the police presence thinned out across Egypt. The pipeline has been shut down since an explosion on February 5th. Egypt's 20-year gas deal with Israel, signed in the Mubarak era, is unpopular with some Egyptians, with critics accusing Israel of not paying enough for the fuel, which wouldn't surprise me. Previous explosions sometimes have forced weeks-long shutdowns along the pipeline run by Gasco, a subsidiary of the national gas company EGAS, as in Egyptian gas. Now, of course, if you have a nationally owned thing, and this is another part of the interesting history behind Egypt, they had the, what's it called, the canal that runs in between the Mediterranean and the Persian Gulf, so you can get ships in there through Egypt, and saves them going all the way around the Horn of Africa, and, Cape of Good Hope, traveling all the heck way around there to get into the Indian Ocean and to reach other places like Australia and what have you. It's much quicker. And the British previously had control of that, along with French forces and American interests. And like the Panama Canal equivalent. And they attacked the installation when the previous Egyptian president nationalized it. And they were routed, so they got their nice little canal all there back for Egypt. And it's just part of those many, many long-repeated stories of how the West tries to go into the Middle East to seize control of strategic resources. Sometimes they win, sometimes they fail, or what have you. But I see this is no different here with EGAS and Libya and all of that kind of stuff. Because, well, let's have a look at the rebellion that first started in Libya. What were the first two companies they set up? Oh, yeah, that's right. A private bank as a central bank for the country to loan out money at interest, which had previously been illegal, and a private oil company instead of the publicly owned oil company, which gave everybody subsidies on their petrol pricing and what have you. Okay, so this is what they do. Now, Egypt said in November that it would tighten security along the pipeline by installing alarms and recruiting security patrols from Bedouin tribesmen in the area. So, you know, you'll be protected against terrorists by a couple of tribesmen who can just basically cut off your oil supply at will. You know, it's almost laughable, isn't it? What kind of protection do they need? What kind of protection do we want for all of those resources and what have you? Are you willing to sacrifice a country's security in order to protect a pipeline? Well, considering that your country's supply of petroleum products is kind of linked to your security in a very, very substantial way, I think it's not too bad an idea. You know, to protect those strategic resources, and of course, when Egyptian or Iraqi or Iranians try to protect their oil, I mean, they're just seen as dangerous or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. But if terrorists go and blow it up, hey, there's your perfect justification. If U.S. military blows it up, on the other hand, mate, you're just a terrorist. You know, who are the real terrorists here? I mean, who's the most well-funded terrorist organization in the world who has the most brainwashed, willing-to-die zealots working for them who know nothing about your culture, who just basically come in tripping balls on Prozac and light beer and blue jeans and trying to kill you all? You know, it's the U.S. military. It happens all the time. It's really sad because you've got so many good people who otherwise wouldn't murder another individual at all as long as they live. Who think that it's a part of a duty to their country to go over there and to shoot other people who haven't done anything to them. You know, it's not like they want to. It's that they're being ordered to because they didn't have any job prospects and to join the military basically because it's the only job that's going. the New World Order's taken all the rest of the manufacturing and all the constructive work and labor out of the American economy. So what you got left other than going off and killing other people for money? It's sad, man. It's what they want. And it's making the world hate U.S. citizens. The whole world over. People are getting really, really tired of it. And they don't blame the New World Order for blaming... they don't blame the New World Order for brainwashing everybody and setting up all of this phony, bogus engagements all over the place to seize control of strategic resources. They don't worry about that. They get angry at the people who are being sent in there to die for somebody else's money, somebody else's resources, somebody else's tyranny that they want to bring about. Okay, it's completely unfair. Life is not fair. Okay, it's like nature. Nature's not fair, but it does balance itself out in the end. So goodness knows what kind of consequences will be falling on these people. You have a look at all the soldiers who are starting to come down, Gulf War syndrome, post-traumatic stress disorder, nervous system diseases, depleted uranium contamination, cancers, autoimmune system problems, you know, the whole nine yards. And then you have a look at all the veterans' benefits that are being cut back. Pay for frontline soldiers being cut back as they start paying private mercenaries from Z, formerly known as Blackwater, now owned by Monsanto, which is now partly owned by Bill Gates, long-running eugenicist. They pay them like 10, 15 times the amount or some ridiculous amount more than real U.S. soldiers who are actually sworn to uphold the Constitution, okay? As opposed to some guy who got a corporate charter who swears to shoot when he's told to. It's a disgusting, disgusting situation. People best wake up to it. Every single time you hear the media report about this, they don't tell you this kind of stuff. They really should do, because they need to, because you do need to know. You do need to know, because you will be able to figure out the BS that they're shoveling in your face next, if you know what they've already been shoveled in your face first. Because they build lies upon other lies. They're like axioms, self-reinforcing ideologies that have no basis in reality, that you use as justification for assumptions on the rest of your thought processes. And it's like you're the Wile E. Coyote and your thoughts are simply that gas that you're running across a ravine in. And suddenly you realize after the smoke all clears that there's nothing underneath your feet at all and you're about to go. That's about it. Wile E. Coyote foreign policy. Thank you, George Bush. Thank you, Republicans and Democrats. Aren't you just a bunch of nice guys, go-getters and what have you? Take charge. Get on out there and kill some of them sand people. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Keeping it real. Keeping it savage. Keeping it bankster. Keeping it fiscally responsible. Hey, and what have we got here? Next one. Police investigate racially charged comments in Oklahoma shootings. Authorities were investigating racially charged comments on a Facebook page of a suspect in the shootings of five black people in Tulsa. Police arrested two white men on Sunday morning, 2 days after the shootings killed three people in a mostly black Tulsa neighborhood. Yeah, let's pump up the race war, shall we? This will be good for America. This will be good for everybody who's just so obviously not racially divided at the moment and being able to be silently conquered by a group of ruthless sociopathic criminal scum. That's not the case, is it? You know, and what about black-on-black crime? I mean, where's the amount of murder statistics and huge articles for that? People don't care about that. They don't get it advertised to them. What about black abortions? You killed, like, what, 50 million black babies or something like that since Planned Parenthood came about? It's extraordinary. There's a full-on genocide campaign going on. And the authorities really do want to hype this up, the Trayvon Martin case. Apparently there's some Black Panther Party or something in the States now saying everybody needs to, like, go get this guy and kill him and blah, 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 blah. It's like basically these people are working for the federal government. Anybody who incites racial violence and doesn't get arrested straight away is working for the federal government. Every single time. Doesn't matter whether they're the Ku Klux Klan or some imam going hardcore and crazy. These guys all wind up working for the FBI or something like that. It's unbelievable. There aren't any real crises to a large degree. You know, most crises are either manufactured, blown out of proportion, or we don't know the real story behind them or the real truth or anything like that. And they're hyped up to make things appear in a certain way. And I should know this because I'm a propagandist and I hype things up to make them appear in a certain way as well. Take what you want from that. Now, there was no connection between the victims and the suspects, and without a motive. Talk of hate crime charges was premature, authorities said. Hate crimes. Oh, yeah. Anybody says anything that involves the word hate or hating something, like, I hate tyranny, I could be charged with a hate crime, couldn't I? I'm such a bad, bad, hateful, spiteful individual, aren't I? You could look at the facts of the case and come up with what would appear to be a logical theory. But we're going to let the evidence take us where we want to go. Tulsa Police Chief Chuck Jordan told reporters on Sunday, I certainly couldn't make that determination right now. Roommates Jack England, 19, and Alvin Watts, 32, were arrested in the early Friday shootings. Authorities say they don't know which one pulled the trigger, but are charging both. Shortly before the killings, England had lamented on his Facebook page that 2 years had passed since his father was killed by a black man who he referred to with a racial slur. I'm gone in the head, England wrote. Watts, England's roommate, offered words of support to his friend in response to the posting. Now, what I think happened here, and this is what usually happens, is people with no motive, no nothing, will be taking pharmaceutical psychotropic drugs of some kind, which it has on the warning labels. You know, it basically, you know how you've got impulse control, how you can just want to, right at that particular moment, smack somebody in the face because they offended you so much, you know, that kind of thing, but you stop yourself because you've got impulse control and you know that it's a very bad, stupid thing to do, and you're in your right head kind of thing, and you know you don't want to get into that kind of business. Well, sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes you'll have drug reactions when you're popping your pills and Prozac and what have you. And it'll stop those impulse controls. So if you have the impulse on the day anniversary of your murdered father by a black man to grab your gun and just shoot a whole of the first couple of black people you meet, nothing's there to stop you, and you just go and do it. Happens all the time. A lot of school shootings, Prozac, Zoloft, all of these other major, incredibly nasty type murders, mass murders, all of these things that sort of appear incredibly freaky, you know, like some lady gets out on her roof with her newborn baby and cuts a leg off or something like that. Just like, oh my God, that's so horrific. I can't believe that happened, you know. It's just like, man, she was taking a lot of pharmaceutical drugs. It happens all the time. Okay, a lot more than people will realize. kills more people than crack, cocaine, heroin, and alcohol, and everything. These drugs are literally fracking deadly. Now, investigators are unsure to what extent the killing of England's father played a role in the shooting, said Tulsa Police Major Walter Evans. Among the dead was one woman identified as Danaya Fields, 49, and two men, Bobby Clark, 54, and William Allen, 31. The two wounded men who were not identified were expected to survive. Oklahoma authorities have said the suspects will likely face state murder charges. A handgun was recovered when the pair was arrested at a home in Turley, a small town north of Tulsa, about 4 miles from the home that they shared. A white pickup truck, similar to that described by a witness, was recovered about 10 miles from the suspect's house, police said. The vehicle had been burned. Sometime after the shootings, England posted another Facebook comment complaining, "People talking expletive on me for some expletive I didn't do." And it just might be the time to call it quits. I hate to say it like that, but I'm done. If something does happen tonight, be ready for another funeral later. Tulsa City Councilman Jack Henderson said he believed the two suspects simply had a grudge against black people. If that proves to be true, he said, he hopes prosecutors pursue twin charges of murder and committing a hate crime. I think that's probably what will happen, said Henderson. The only black member of the Tulsa City Council in whose Northside district is where the shootings took place. Before the arrest, some residents worried about whether or not it was safe to attend church on Easter Sunday, Henderson said. Police had few clues in the shooting and pleaded for help from the public on Saturday afternoon. We were desperate for leads, Jordan said. About 10 of the 40 telephone tips received proved helpful, he said. Now, when a community gets attacked and people get shot up and murdered all over the place, it's quite interesting how they will react and go to the police to make sure that this kind of person gets taken down, right? That's how communities respond. They recognize a threat, and then they take measures to get rid of that threat because they don't like it. People don't like living under threat, do they? So they call the police, and they get the tips, and all of a sudden this criminal's gone. How much technological surveillance helped all those people before they got shot? None. In fact, it proves the point that John Lott, who the author of More Guns, Less Crime, has been saying for quite a while, is that the people who benefit most from gun ownership are people in poor black neighborhoods. Now, wouldn't it be interesting here, because black-on-black crime is so big, and the criminals carry around guns all the time, regardless of whether or not they've got concealed carry permits. And if you've got the ability to pull out a gun and defend yourself, you are not at your attacker's mercy anymore, and you've got the ability to put some distance between yourself and your attacker. Now, supposing these three black people were armed at the time that these one or two crazed white guys who are fueled with racial hatred, allegedly, and what have you, came on down and started pointing a gun at you. You just point out a gun and shoot back. He's dead. You know, and you call the cops to mop up the body. Self-defense. Ba-boom. No problems. Three people are still alive, and one person or two people that were going to murder them are no longer alive. Or maybe, if they were all armed in the first place, those people wouldn't have come to that neighborhood in the first place because they knew that they would have gotten shot. And they probably, and their impulse control might have been a little bit stronger had they realized that they were going to get a bullet for it instead of just jail time. You know, jail time is something that happens after the fact, after the thing. But if you realize that you're about to get killed if you do something and that death is going to be instantaneous and right in your face, it's a much, much greater stopping power than any amount of law, because the law follows rules. Other people, on the other hand, they don't follow rules quite so well. They follow the rule as, you're pointing a gun at me and you're going to try and kill me, you're going to hurt me, hurt my family or anything like that. I'm armed. I don't have to bow down to this. I'm going to point mine right back at you. I'm going to tell you to get off my property before I squeeze the trigger. And 99% of the time, people don't even have to wind up pulling that trigger at all. because just showing a weapon is enough to stop people in their tracks. That's why the Second Amendment is so important in the United States, because not only do you have to have the ability to defend yourself against people who would not value your safety, you also have to be able to protect your country from your government. And that was originally the reason why the Second Amendment is in there. Not only to just protect yourself against your fellow man, but against your government, should it turn tyrannical and require overthrowing, or more better yet, make sure that your people aren't unarmed. So that if your government does go rogue, does start going nuts, does start coming out at you, you are not a victim. You have the capacity to defend yourself. That's the main reason behind it. People forget, and they go, oh, gun bans, guns are bad. Call in, ladies and gentlemen, 218-339-8525. Back in a minute. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. Now, before it's news.com, love this website, fear of tyranny is now treated as a psychiatric disorder in the West. And you might remember us reading out a list of all the symptoms and things of that nature that were being talked about. I think Intel Hub, I think, came up with that one. The madman in the White House needs you to believe in his magic, and that those who question the U.S. government's narrative of the war on terror are mentally ill deviants. And it's got, like, Obama as the Mad Hatter from The Child's Story, Alice in Wonderland. The modern totalitarian state is the psychotherapist for the whole of society. It acts on the elitist principle that it knows everything and the people deserve to be mind-controlled and brainwashed for their own good. This is part of the tenets of the Communist Manifesto, as I understand it, that anybody who questions the benefits of communism to be ridiculed and to be thought of by the average person as completely and utterly insane. You poor person, you think communism doesn't work. You must be out of your mind. And they send you away to be re-educated in giant things called gulags. Defenders of the totalitarian system demonize their democratic critics as insane and suppress political speech with the mind control techniques that have grown out of modern psychological and mental health research. If you point out their contradictions, lies and inconsistencies in their narratives, they call you a conspiracy theorist and chew you out with psychobabble. Hold on a second. How exactly do all of these psychiatric disorders get decided on whether or not they exist? Do they have, like, lab tests or blood tests or any form of test whatsoever that's scientifically verifiable? Oh, yeah, that's right. Not one of them. How many disorders are there that they've made up by consensus of hand-raising, which has no basis in the scientific method whatsoever? What, 700? 900? And this is the new one that they've made up. Conspiracy theorists. It's a mental disorder. And if you acknowledge that you fear their despotic vision for Western society and the world, they call you paranoid and say you have a psychiatric disorder. Okay, you read a history book, and you look at it, and you're like, whoa, okay, a bunch of private bankers took over the Federal Reserve way back in the day. They've since bought off everybody that matters, that can save the country from tyranny, and we're being led into a nightmarish system worse than any dictator throughout history has ever envisaged. But that's nothing to worry about. And if you do worry about it, you're nuts. Okay. These people have no basis in reality anymore. Okay. Let's just call a spade a spade. If you're in the psychiatric industry, it's already too late for you. I'm sorry. All right. Now, regardless, it does not matter what twisted and perverted ideology that the totalitarian power seekers hide behind. It could be communism, Nazism, Islamism, neoconservatism, or even environmentalism. Every ism is a thought-controlled prison. Citizens are suppressed in the same manner under every totalitarian hellhole by their mental overlords. Anti-democratic elites in all totalitarian prisons use the language of mental health to dismiss dissenters and enforce their dogmatic beliefs and totalitarian policies on an unwilling public. In 2009, Brendan O'Neill of Spiked.com wrote a powerful essay called The Psychologization of Dissent, the Global Warming Skepticism Mental Disorder. How about how the West is following in the footsteps of the Soviet Union? O'Neill wrote that the idea that climate change denial is a psychological disorder, the product of a spiteful, willful, or simply inbuilt neural inability to face up to the catastrophe of global warming is becoming more and more popular among green-leaning activists and academics. And nothing better sums up the elitism and authoritarianism of the environmentalist lobby than its psychologization of dissent. The labeling of any criticism of the politics of global warming, first as denial, and now as evidence of mass psychological instability, is an attempt to write off all critics and skeptics as deranged and to lay the ground for inevitable authoritarian solutions to the problem of climate change. Historically, only the most illiberal and misanthropic regimes have treated disagreement and debate as signs of mental ill health. In the West, the mislabeling of dissent as paranoia and crazy, I'm sure anybody who's a conspiracy theorist has been called paranoid or crazy at some point. You know what I'm talking about, don't you? People who believe there should be government transparency and media accountability have been exiled out of the mainstream political community. Yeah, because we ask questions, we actually care about our countries. I've noticed what's really separated the dumb people who don't really care about anything is that they have no sense of pride, no patriotism, no nothing like that, no sense of self-accomplishment, self-achievement, no faith in themselves. They got no faith in anything. They're just complete nihilists. So, I mean, I just feel very sad if somebody doesn't believe in anything. At least climate cultists believe in something strong enough to get off their ass and do something about it. You know what I'm saying? You know, at least they do something. They might be doing the wrong thing and doing it for the wrong reasons, but their heart's in the right place. There's a problem with that because, you know, people can be easily manipulated. It's a bit sad. Bit sad. Really. You see good people all the time. Almost every time you go to work or if your car breaks down any part of the world or whatever, somebody will give you a hand. Somebody. Apart from, you know, maybe in New York cities or something like that, where a guy was stabbed and just lay on the ground there on the sidewalk, bleeding to death. People walked by and took pictures of him on their iPhones. One guy lifted him up and then he saw the blood underneath and then he put him back down again and kept walking. You know, there's this extreme scary sort of apathy that people have got, to the point where Michael Moore, in fact, was just doing tests, you know, just had a guy just lying down on the sidewalk in several cities in the United States and Canada, just pretending to be dead. Just seeing how long it would take a passerby to just go, oh my God, this guy, it looks like this guy's dead. Are you okay, buddy? You know, just seeing how long it would take somebody to actually stop what they were doing to see whether or not a person who they were walking by on the street was actually dead lying on the sidewalk. And in Toronto, it took like 30 seconds. Somebody was like walking by, oh my God, is that guy dead? And he's like, no, I'm not dead. And he's like, oh my God, thank God. I hope you're okay. And in, I think it might have been Brooklyn or Manhattan or something like that. Guy was on the ground for nearly 9 minutes before somebody barely even looked at him. And I think it might have been like something like 25 minutes or something before somebody even checked on him. Hey, it's a dog-eat-dog world, man. It's a dog-eat-dog world. But what does that say about people, you know? Because they're out in the middle of nowhere or whatever. People don't tend to be that antisocial, you know, because there ain't that many people around to socialize with, partly. And there ain't too much to do, partly. Whereas in a massive city, we've got more than enough people to socialize with if you choose to, and more than enough things to do. You actually have to start shutting yourself off because there's too much stimulation. Have you noticed that? You're just going around in your daily life, it becomes, you almost have to come up with a list of things that you say no to doing on a daily basis. Because I don't have time, I don't have this, I don't have that or the other. All those things that you procrastinate and put off because you've got all your rest of your time fracking wasted away working on something. We're running out of time, aren't we? That's how I'm starting to think. We're all just kind of sitting here, running down the clock. Until one day we'll come, we're not here anymore. And will we look back and see that I've had a great life, I've done some amazing things, and I think that I've actually given some benefit to the world and some benefit to my family via my actions. You know, is that how you're going to feel on your deathbed? I think it probably should be that way for everybody, but I don't think it really is. Kind of like not everybody can be a rock star or whatever, because not everybody's willing to sacrifice basically every waking moment in order to work for a massive goal like that. If you want to be really huge and what have you, you have to do a huge amount of work. It's just that simple. People don't do all the work for you. You really do have to apply yourself. Most people aren't willing to do that. And I can understand that because, hey, it's stressful. You may be able to accomplish cool and amazing things and whatever and be on stage with hundreds of thousands of people with their lighters swinging back and forth. But it means that you also have to get on a band bus after that and travel like 6 hours in scorching heat to the next place where you're going to play. You know, it's a painful reality that you experience every time you get to where you thought was a good place. Just like mental health and psychiatry and all of that sort of jazz. Because these people don't really care about your mental health or well-being. They claim that they do, but if they really did, they'd actually figure out and do some research and find out that psychiatry is just a whole bunch of nonsense. And stop doing it and stop giving people incredibly dangerous drugs. It's just that simple. But the fact is they don't look into it. Most people who will spend years of their life studying into something think that because they've studied years into it, that they know all there is to know about it. And that if somebody comes up with something contradictory, their education says otherwise. I came up to a psychiatrist and said, look, mate, you're a con man. Okay, everything that you're talking about is just insane psychobabble that has no basis in the scientific community. You're not a scientist of any kind. All the drugs that you give people are poisons that have very little benefit, if any, over the placebo effect. You're selling people death, mate. And you're profiting immensely off that death. You are virtually a murderer. Except you're 1 degree removed from it, so you think that you can do it with impunity. Are you a sociopath? You know, they won't respond well to that. I don't think so, because they get cognitive dissonance like all the rest of us. We all build up a worldview and ideas and jobs and pride and self like that and a residual self-image, which later on we figure out doesn't exist anymore. Okay? Our varying degrees of self-actualization through the process of learning about life and what it's really about gradually begin to erode away and no longer exist, not have any value. You wonder, you're back to square one. Getting back to square one is really, really frustrating, especially if you've spent years of your life and hundreds of thousands of dollars getting educated so that you'll know at least something you can get a living off, and then suddenly find out that living ain't living at all because it promotes death, hence it's not a living. Okay? I wonder how these people live with themselves. And, well, I suppose if they had the nice car, the nice house, and all the trimmings, perhaps life could be tolerable. And if they didn't recognize the pain and the suffering and the fear and the death and the destruction that they cause upon society, it could be livable. So you get recorded. So they live in this cloud, right? I'm getting rewarded well for obviously helping people because I know that my drugs help people because I get paid when I give it to them. And any problems that they have out, oh, we'll just try a different drug to counteract that one and then I'll get paid even more. And then the gravy train keeps on chugging. Until eventually I'm wealthy as, and I've caused heaps amounts of death, suffering, caused families to break up. But it's not my fault. It's not the fault of the drugs or anything like that. This person just obviously wasn't able to deal with their problems. And I didn't tell them to deal with their problems. I told them to take a pill. Okay, so it's not my fault. Come on. You know, there's moral relativism is one of the most dangerous things I've started to recognize. Not knowing if there's an objective right or wrong is an extremely scary prospect because it's deadly. Very deadly. And you can get your hands on so much destruction these days if you've got the right connections, especially if you want to be head of a country or something like that. Now, a fear of tyranny. Now, is there such a thing as an irrational fear of tyranny, you know, like if you drive through a drunk stop or something of that nature and you go, no, this is unconstitutional, this is against my rights. I'm on the Queen's Highway. You can't stop me. I haven't done anything wrong. I haven't damaged anybody. I haven't caused loss. You know, kind of getting a bit militant about it to a degree. The other question becomes, is this officer now going to react very angrily to me? I don't know how to live anymore because every time when I try to live by a common sense, some douchebag with a badge or some other BS becomes a real pain in your neck. Start shoving stuff in your face, start spraying you with pepper spray and what have you, tasering you, get down on the ground, you know, oh my goodness. What is it with people who don't understand what they're doing and violence? Is that the natural cause and effect here? If you're a real violent person, you don't know what to do, that's what you do, you be violent. We'll be right back.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
Welcome Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand.
Keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come.
And this race war thing, we don't have quite so much of that going on over here in New Zealand. I mean, there's a bit, you know, we have Maori activists and stuff like that being very upset at the cruel criminalisation that Maori suffer. You know, like, if you're a Maori man and you're caught for a minor crime, you're five times more likely to go to jail as a result of that minor crime than a white guy. So there's obvious judicial discrimination, police discrimination. I asked a policeman one time, what does he look for when he looks for people who are smoking marijuana? He says, without batting an eyelash, groups of males under 25. So if you're a male and you're under 25 and you've got some friends who are around the same age group or whatever, just know that you are a target for the police in this country if you're smoking weed. You know? They do it all the time. It's profiling. They don't go to the guy in the nice Porsche with the Gucci sunglasses and all of that kind of stuff who's snorting cocaine off the dashboard. No, they don't go after him. They go for these little students and what have you who are just like parked up at a park somewhere or something like that with their mates having a wee blaze. That's the level of discrimination that we have in this country against the youth and the racial groups and that kind of thing. But in general, there's a deep undercurrent of racism in this country, to be sure. We have talk show hosts like Michael Laws and Paul Henry and what have you, these guys who are like big in the radio here. They're like Rush Limbaugh type size, you know, enough people listen to them. And they're casting off racial slurs all the time, and all these Maoris are all bums and blah, blah, blah. It's just quite horrific to listen to because they kind of incite a little bit of racial hatred. And yet, when somebody like, say, Winston Peters comes off and says we've got an immigration problem in this country, he's accused of being racist and blah, 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 because, well, he's Winston Peters. You know, you've got to demonize people who are talking about reality, you know. You have a look at these other homogenous type societies like Finland and what have you, only let in like, what, 500 people a year to immigrate, you know, because they want to those people who immigrate to not be able to immigrate in such numbers that they can set up their own independent communities and upset the general homogenous nature of the society so that society basically remains the same. Other people who come to Finland to live, to stay, become Finns. Because there's no local culture for there, there's or anything like that for them to assimilate into other than Finnish culture. Whereas in New Zealand, on the other hand, instead of allowing 500 people a year, we allow 50,000. And what's happened is we've got these large areas of the of parts of cities and things like that where very specific racial groups have moved in. We have a large Asian population now living in Mount Albert. In Auckland here, we have large Pacific Island populations living in South Auckland and things of that nature. Howick out in East Auckland, traditionally Chinese now. And it seems that because so many people from so many different countries are arriving in such numbers, they're now capable of living together without having to assimilate into the local Kiwi culture, you know, that kind of thing. That's the sort of thing that immigration policy is supposed to address, but it doesn't. And there's a reason why it doesn't, because they don't want everybody to have total harmony in their societies and communities and all of that kind of stuff. They want division, because division keeps people very weak. If everybody was united together and said, you know what, I don't care if I'm an immigrant, I'm a New Zealander, and I really love this country, and I see it being sold out from under us by a tyrannical scumbag. And I don't care whether you're from China or India, if that's how you think, and you're a patriot, and you like the country that you're living in now, New Zealand, you consider yourself a New Zealander, then there's no reason for racial disharmony whatsoever, because the common thing that unites you is the nation that you're currently living in, isn't it? Stop worrying about how the color of other people's skin. It's irrelevant. It doesn't matter. The quality of their character, not the pigment of their skin, is how you should judge people. If somebody's a douchebag, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because they're a douchebag. It doesn't matter where they come from. As long as you're respectful and you don't want to be a pain to other people in your community by, I don't know, smashing, stealing cars and what have you, who knows? If you're a criminal, we don't like you. If you're a decent person who, you know, runs a good business, paying taxes and what have you, frick. What problems could we conceivably have? very few, I think. And people who see race as a good reason to spark up these big events and divisions and what have you. Ugh, mate, come on. Grow up. Okay, see who the real enemy is. The real enemy isn't the person of a different skin colour who lives next door to you. The real enemy is the person probably of the same skin colour as you who's falsely representing you as one of the misrepresentatives in Parliament. Okay, they're the people who are much more likely to screw you over, right? Petty crime doesn't matter. If somebody steals a handbag or is even Grand Theft Auto or whatever, that doesn't matter, especially when you've got former parliamentarians and even current parliamentarians who are involved in business in this country ripping off huge amounts of money through finance companies. Okay, those are the real enemy because they actually destroy thousands and thousands and thousands of people's lives, rather than just getting thousands and thousands of dollars worth of merchandise that they steal and go to a chop shop, as with a car stealing or what have you. They get millions, take them off to offshore accounts, Cayman Islands, Swiss banks, whatever the heck, and they live off the fat of the land, because everybody else who's like mum and pop investors put the last of their life savings in there, the last of their nest egg. They decide to put them all in one basket with some finance company because it has a Minister of Parliament on the sheets who's one of the directors of the company, like in Hewlett Finance here in Auckland, New Zealand. Okay, and then they lose all their money and they wonder, how the heck did that happen? Okay, you're being naive. The reason why these people put their names on those documents and what have you is so that they can con you into trusting them, okay? And another finance company, a guy named Jock Hobbs, who's a real famous New Zealand rugby player, that kind of thing, that collapsed for the same corrupt reasons. They hire these people for their reputations to get people to invest so that they can steal your money. They're manipulating it. It's PR. That's the basic motivation here. And race war is no different. It's still big PR. It's getting to buy into the idea that you need to be afraid of your neighbours, that you need to be aggressive and violent and discriminatory. How does that promote anything good in society? It doesn't. People who are also promoting racial harmony on the other side of the spectrum are often just misleading people too. They're like collective. They'll go hard out anti-racists or whatever. And you'll find out that the anti-racists are just as virulently angry and violently anti-racist as the hardcore racists are. There's no middle ground for these people. Yeah, because they're not libertarian. They don't think to themselves, look, if you're a good dude and you're not breaking any laws, there's no problems. For example, I think that people should be able to express racism or whatever if they want to. And subsequently what happens is most people who are good, decent, non-racist, will be sitting there having a conversation with you at a bar somewhere, and you'll say something, and you'll find out that they just kind of don't call you anymore. They don't want to hang out with you anymore. And you find out that a lot of your relationships that you still maintain are just with other races. So you kind of form yourself a little clique of angry other people. And you, because you're so intolerant, you don't let other people into your groups. You wind up ostracizing yourself. That's what happens when you've got a life full of hate. You wind up withdrawing away from everything. That's the stupidity of it. If you're caring and if you listen and if you actually are interested in other people and you're not just interested in being a sycophant for your own ideas, you'd be more than willing to hang out with people from other groups all over the place, and you find out that, hey, these people aren't that bad after all. What was I worried about? There's nothing going on. These people weren't, you know, scheming to take over the country with some racial wave of immigration or anything like that. They weren't even doing that consciously at all. They just wanted to have a happy life. They just wanted to come to a country that's nice, that treats them well, where they can have a decent wage and live without the possibility of, you know, getting mugged in the middle of the night, someplace with decent social order. Not too much to ask for, I don't think. So immigration ain't that bad a thing, especially if you've got good people coming into your country. On the other hand, I just feel that the subject in itself, to even approach it, is a dangerous thing. That's how taboo it is to talk about any kind of racial equality or any type of immigration policy. It's a real hot button topic, and you know, people can get a heck of a lot of flack for so much as talking about it and trying to understand it in an open and honest way. It's that hot, and that it's almost like you're in a trench, and on either side of you is an even larger trench with even more dug-in people, and you can't really go either way without being shot down by those people. And you can't stay in the middle either, because they'll both get you. You can't win. You know, why can't we just have honesty and just have people say how they genuinely feel, and then other people listen to them and then respond with how they genuinely feel? Whereas the racism debate is all about you, and blah, blah, blah. This is what you think. This is what you want to do. And this is what everybody else should do, etc. And they're not taking any personal responsibility. You know, somebody tell me, Vinny, why don't you do something? You know, if you think the government's out of control and whatever. I am doing something. Every fracking day I'm doing something, mate. What about you? Okay? Just talking about it and getting it out there is doing something. So don't be worried that somebody's going to say, well, you're not doing enough. You need to go out there and you need to promote racial hatred in order to advance your own. They're stupid. They're stupid. Trying to use you. Trying to use you for their own goal. And as I said before, these people are most likely federal government employees. You know, this Trayvon Martin case is just being blown right the heck out of proportion. Obama's coming out and saying, oh, well, you know, we need to have equality, and we need to stop this hatred and et cetera. Everybody just needs to chill out and what have you. And meanwhile, they pass things like the NDAA, which allows the government to just black bag people, and also pass other legislation that qualifies being upset at government tyranny to be a very, very bad, nasty thing. And you're a demon. You're a demon. You're a demon if you try to oppose tyranny, right? Like Breitbart, for example, final cause of death deferred. At 7:11 p.m. Eastern Time, Craig Harvey from the Los Angeles County Medical Examiner's Office returned our call seeking information on the autopsy of Andrew Breitbart. According to Harvey, quote, "We have completed the autopsy examination. The final cause of death has been deferred. We have ordered additional toxicology and microscopic tests, and we expect to have those completed and the cause of death determined in 4 to 6 weeks. If somebody just died of a simple heart attack, do you think you need to run a toxicology exam and all of that kind of stuff to figure out what really killed him, unless he was killed by some kind of drug that was shot into him to make him have a heart attack? Hmm? You think it would take 4 to 6 weeks? Hmm? According to sources who wish to remain anonymous who were in the Los Angeles area, say preliminary results from the LA coroner indicate, quote, massive heart attack. So not only do we pass laws where we can black bag you, not only do we kill you if you're about to release damaging information on you, not only will we pass a law that says that if you criticize us, you're completely insane and we can force drug you and put you into psychiatric institutions, but also Obama orders press blackout after U.S. credit rating cut. A shattering report from RIA Novosti's Washington, D.C. Bureau appears to prove that the mainstream press in America has become nothing more than the propaganda arm of the Obama regime. There's that word again. When during a White House news briefing this past week, they were effectively ordered not to report on this past week's credit rating cut of U.S. government debt. The Russian international news agency RIA Novosti is a Russian state-owned news agency based in the capital, Moscow, whose clients include the presidential administration, Russian government, federal council, state Duma, leading ministries and government departments, administrations of Russian's regions, and representatives of Russian and foreign business communities, diplomatic missions, and public organizations. The White House news briefing referred to it in this report occurring this past Thursday, the 5th of April, when Obama regime officials were queried about the latest shock downgrade of the United States credit rating, stating that the American people, this critical event should be kept in the category of, quote, a non-story, so as not to confuse and or shock them. If you're going to have a country that's run not into the ground, mind you. Don't you think it's an idea to actually keep them informed as to what's going on so they can react in an appropriate way? Perhaps. Maybe that's just me. Maybe in order for a country to survive, I believe you need a credible media to not be lying to people left, right, and center and keeping the information from them so they can make appropriate decisions based on solid evidence. If you figured out that the economy is collapsing and you decide to secure some of your holdings with real physical gold and silver delivered to your house in your possession, that kind of thing, mate, you're just a little bit nuts and you're a bit paranoid, so we're probably going to need to confiscate that and put you away in a nice little padded room with a straitjacket on and a Thorazine drip. That'll help you out, you friggin' communist. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio. .com. All right, anyway, anybody wants to call in, this is your last chance. What's it like living in the United States, a place so racially divided? I had some friends who went down to San Francisco, I think, like that, and they walked into a Burger King. And they were the only white people in there, and there was all these other black people in there, and they all looked at them like, what you doing down here, son? And they're from New Zealand, and they're not used to that kind of discrimination, you know? We don't have that kind of thing going on here at all, you know? It's not like that. You know, there'll be certain individuals or whatever who'll be like ultimate in douchebaggery and what have you, but in general, it's not quite at that widespread and obviously in your face like it allegedly is in America. So if you want to talk about racial discrimination and violence and all of that kind of stuff, what it's like to be a member of a racial group that gets discriminated against or played off against another one, who cares? 218-339-8525 is the number to call in. And a couple ideas for shows coming up. What we wanted to do is bring on Mark Passio and Freighter X together. So we've got a two occult Freemason secret society bros going hard at it. It'll be a heck of a lot of fun. Kathy in California, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Benny. This is Kathy in California.
How are you, darling?
Your faithful listener. Just wanted to say hi to you. And we are having a lovely day of chemtrails. They love to do this every day. Just spray us down like a bunch of cockroaches. You know how that is.
Yeah. You should go make some snow cones. Don't worry. It's not lemon. It's aluminium.
Well, we don't live where it snows. We're in the southern part, so we don't get any snow cones.
Maybe but you could have a sand cone or something.
Yeah, we have some of those. So, how are you today?
Oh, it's going great. I feel like I'm have had nearly a week and a half off doing the show, so yeah, I'm feeling quite recharged.
Well, good. I just wanted to say hi because I haven't talked to you in a while, and I just wanted to let you know I am listening in. And great
show.
How have
you been, Kathy? Your husband passed away not too long ago, didn't he?
Yeah, in January, yeah. The last month was really hard for him, but he's been sick with COPD, which is chronic. It's a lung disease.
Mm-hmm.
And he got it when he was in the military. He was a Vietnam vet for 22 years. Anyway, so he had a hard time the last couple years, but the last month of his life was really tough, and so he's at peace now. That's all we can say. But thanks for asking him. Yeah,
Well, we should hope he's at peace, because I'm really starting to get real sick of it, Kathy, to tell you the truth, just how badly veterans get treated, how they get sent into, what was it, Agent Orange reaction he had, wasn't it?
No, what happened with him was he was working in a hangar. He worked on flight decks and things like that, but they were in the hangar. And this guy was working on a battery, and he happened to be in the hangar with him, and the battery exploded and killed the guy, and his lungs got burnt with battery acid. So that's what happened there. I mean, he did two tours in Vietnam, but he did never get Agent Orange, thank God. But I guess he'll be spraying us with that soon, so I guess everybody will have Agent Orange.
Yeah. Praise be to Monsanto.
Yeah. Well, they're spraying our cornfields now with Agent Orange, so it won't be long.
Oh, my God.
Won't be long before they spray everybody with it. You know, why would they stop with just the cornfields, you know?
Well, I find it hilarious that these people wear, toxin chemical suits with breathing apparatuses and things of that nature. Well, they're spraying stuff all over the food that we eat.
A couple of weeks ago, it was so bad out there. I mean, my street isn't that wide. I could hardly see across the street. It was just one big haze. And I had to put some trash out because it was trash day the next day. And I came back in the house coughing so bad I couldn't believe it. I had to take an allergy pill. And I said, oh. Next time I wear my nose cone when I go outside. This is terrible. I mean, it's spraying right and left.
And they're spraying all sorts of different stuff right and left. You know, there's the, what do you got? You got your heavy chemicals, heavy metals, sorry, like aluminium being sprayed in the air through the chemtrails. You got goodness knows what raining down on you from the exhaust of everybody's cars. Like I went to LA once, and the first thing that I felt when I looked out the window of the plane at Los Angeles was sickness, because I'd never seen smog before. It was so gross, man.
Yeah, that was before they did chemtrails. LA was always bad. Because it's a big basin, but if they're spraying chemtrails in L.A., I'd hate to be there because they get no wind in there. It's just a big basin, and it doesn't go anywhere. So the people are just one big mass. At least it blows eventually out of our way, out to the ocean or something here. But I mean, still, it takes it a while, and we have those clouds up there that are fake. They're not real clouds. We know that.
Mm-hmm. And joining this conversation now, we have Lisa from East Texas. Lisa, welcome.
Hey, Benny. Thanks for having me on. I just listened to all this crazy news. I've read it all day earlier, but you just listen to it being spoken by somebody else, and you think, oh my gosh. So I thought I would call in and give kind of a public service announcement so that people who are interested could feel like they can do something to fight the tyranny and the craziness. I just received in the mail an anti-Agenda 21 action kit. You've heard of Tom DeWeese?
No.
What? Hello?
No, I haven't heard of him. If you can, what's his, does he have a website?
Okay.
Because I'll go on
well,
there. I'll get him on the
show.
Well,
you know what? Just Google Tom DeWeese, DeWeese. It is a kit that will, he's one of the major, activists against Agenda 21. I don't know if it's Tom or DeWeese.com, but I'm sure.
From the American Policy Center.org?
Yeah, he is. Yeah. And he's put together, I'm sure on the website. I get his email in my inbox, often. So he sent an alert, saying that he's finally put together an action kit that people can order because people were asking him, how do we fight this? How we don't know what to do and when to do it and so forth. So he did put together a kit. Now it's over $100, I think it was. But I was thinking, if several concerned citizens get together in a local community and, chip in and get it, that is something, it's putting tools in people's hand to do one of the only things we can do, which is fight things at the local level. So I just wanted to let people know that's out there. You know, it's a good blueprint for how to get started in fighting it at the local level, and gives you tools to do that. So I just thought I'd throw out something constructive today, since all the news is so crazy.
Well, thank you very much for that, Lisa.
You're welcome.
Well, I have just sent out an email to him now through his website, requesting him for an interview. So we'll bring him on and we'll get him talk about the kit and promote it, that kind of thing. So
yeah,
thanks for that.
He's a good interview. I've heard him on the radio before. He's a really sharp guy, and he's been fighting it longer than most people you will know. So that'd be great. I'd love to hear you guys talk on that. So
What was his name again?
Tom DeWeese, DeWeese. Lots of E's.
AmericanPolicy.org.
Yeah, there you go. Yes, and that's a great site. You can find a lot of information there as well. You know, that's free. But just for people who feel overwhelmed at trying to piece together a plan to get started in fighting it, because you have to start fighting it sometime. You know, it comes to us all eventually. You know, and so for people who are not skilled in learning, knowing how to put together a battle plan, I think he's done a good job at that. And that way, we can actually do something at our local level.
See, and isn't that wonderful? Somebody can, like, make a tool about some description, and then suddenly everybody else can just learn to use that tool, start doing it, you know?
Right.
I wonder who invented the hammer and wondered how far that idea would really go.
You never know. You never know. It's evolved, I think, over the millennia, too. But, yeah, I mean, a tool. That's what we have is tools and our toolkit. Because if we just have nebulous ideas, we are not going to make progress, right? Just like if we didn't have hammers, we probably couldn't build houses, wooden, you know, structures very well. So, and I'm always looking for tools because, honestly, I know there's somebody better. I mean, I could probably sit down and take a lot of time to do something like that. But I always look to people who have a little more knowledge than me to see if they have invented something before I try to recreate the wheel.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny, though, you have to look hard for the tools to free yourself, but you don't have to look very hard at all to elect tools into government. So thank you very much. Thank you very much, ladies, for joining me, Kathy and Lisa. And thank you very much. And we'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. Please call us up to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. I need a tenner. If anybody's got $10 they could donate me, I need to kind of make the bills this week, please do. So, yep. Cheers. See you again.